The pride, passion, and pageantry of college football lives here. This is the Paul Feinbaum Show, Hour One Podcast.
Live at Auburn, Alabama. What a day it is as we get ready for week three of the college football season. And on the plains, they are raring to go here with Penn State in town as we say hello to you. And quite an afternoon we have for you. A lot of important, well, I was about to say a lot of important guests will be dropping by our set. A lot of students are excited. This is a huge game for the Auburn Tigers, and that's self-explanatory. And the head coach of the Tigers will join us a little bit later on. Roman, good to see you.
Good seeing you, too. I won't take that first comment personally, Paul. I will let you pass with that. You probably will have much, much more inspiring guests than myself.
Well, we haven't seen you since we had you on a week ago Tuesday. And then the next night, last week, we had Coach Stoops on, and they played your segment as he was coming on right before the Florida game. And usually I'm the one causing uneasiness among between SEC and ESPN personnel and coaches, but you were the one this time.
You know, at least I know they're listening. That is what I will take from it. My opinion still really has not changed from my first take. I thought Kentucky played well. I thought Florida helped them out a lot. But overall, Kentucky was more mentally tough and outperformed them.
You said they were soft.
Yes.
You said they were going to lose.
Yes.
And essentially, your opinion has not changed.
Won the game. I still don't think they're great offensive line-wise up front. I still don't think they're pushing guys around like I'm used to seeing from a Kentucky team. I thought they found something.
Are you doubling down on your criticism?
And I'm just being honest.
I thought they
found a really nice weak spot of Florida's defense was recreating the edges. Florida did not set an edge on the defense, and because of that, Kentucky was successful running the football late in the game. But you look early in that game, Kentucky could not run the ball that well. But I do give Kentucky a lot of credit and their coaching staff a lot of credit because they didn't take it personally when I said that. They didn't come out there and say, you know what, we're going to try and show everybody, including that Roman Harper guy, that we are tough, we're going to run the ball. No, they put the ball in their best player's hand named Will Levis, and we said, go win us a football game early. And he threw the ball and spread it around. And defensively, they made enough plays to set their teams up to score. And that was the difference in the game.
I take it nobody here in Auburn cares about Kentucky and Florida last week, but they do care about the Auburn Tigers. So give us a little bit of a preview of this Auburn team, what you think of them. You're very popular on this Auburn campus based on some statements you made last year. You're no more popular this year. Give us your assessment of Auburn.
They've looked good at times. They've not looked good at times. So the best version of Auburn could beat anybody. The worst version of Auburn, which seems to creep its way up sometimes, is not what they want to see. I think you're going to have a ready opponent to go in Penn State coming in here. They're going to have plenty of fans. I saw them all in the airports. They're coming. But Auburn's crowd will be the difference in this game. I truly, truly believe that. I don't think it's the players on the field. If they limit the mistakes and do what they're supposed to do and do what Coach Hartson's probably trying to coach them to do, run the football, protect the football, defensively be a little bit more opportunistic. They have not caused turnovers on defense, Paul. That is a stat that must change on Saturday if they want to win this game. It's going to get the crowd involved, and everything else kind of sets up off of that. And anytime you got an offense that's still trying to figure themselves out, the easiest way to help them is defense, get a turnover, or set your team up to score. All those things build confidence within the team, and it helps you play complementary football, which at the end of the day is what everybody's goal is to be.
As you look at Auburn, we haven't had a great sample size, but we will tomorrow. What does this team look like to you record-wise?
Record-wise, overall? You know, it's just so hard. Injuries happen. They're the middle of the pack.
I don't really think
West
it's that hard. There's 12 games. What do they look like record-wise?
If they win 8 games, that's an amazing season for Auburn. I don't know if they get to 8. They got to get to this fourth one first. So important that they win this game on Saturday, tomorrow, if they want to achieve the goals, just because they've already cut Brian Harsin's legs out from up under him. They got rid of the AD. They did some other things. They already tried to remove him this offseason. He stuck through it, and it's almost like a rallying cry for this locker room.
But the AD's contract was up.
Correct.
He was not going to be retained. He's the one that hired Brian Harsin over the objection of – are any of you big fat cat boosters? I just want to make sure. You are – yeah. Do I see any yellow wood around here? No. So, I mean, we all know – you think they? I mean, eight wins would be pretty amazing. But if they lose tomorrow, which they're an underdog, it seems like this whole thing could start to come unwind.
The schedule's just going to get harder and harder and harder. Auburn's biggest thing is every year they still got to play Alabama. They got Georgia, and then on top of that, they got an LSU team who's as talented as anybody. But are they good enough right now under Brian Kelly to beat you? Then you got Mississippi State, which is a better team than they were last year. You got Arkansas, who's hitting on all cylinders right now. Looks like one of the best teams in all of the SEC.
Right.
They're going to be on the schedule. And you also have Texas A&M, who we thought was great, but then we don't know how great they are because they still got to figure things out themselves.
So let me ask you about A&M. Talk about big games. They have one against Miami tomorrow. That's not even, when the season began, one of their top four or five games. It is now. What is wrong with them, and can it be corrected?
So what is wrong with them is they're not getting any offensive production. They're not running the ball well. When Jimbo Fisher has been good at Texas A&M, they've been able to run the football and then been able to throw off of those things. Because they're not running the football consistently and well, even though they have a really good running back in A-Chain, that's what's holding them back. And now you're putting more pressure on the quarterback to play better. And when you don't have a superstar quarterback, quote unquote, everybody else around this quarterback has to play better if they want to be a better team. And so whenever you don't have the one most important position with the ability to be able to elevate everybody else's game, that means everybody around him has to play better. So if Texas A&M, it's a must win for this team. But if they're not getting the offensive production, if they don't continue to change that, which I don't know if they can change it, Jimbo's going to run his offense. I think they're going to start Max Johnson. They have to try and get more production and more big plays. They got to be more offensively minded. So – it's going to be really tough because this Texas A&M team, you look at their schedule going forward after Miami, all these teams they play against score points. And if Texas A&M is not scoring points, how do you win these games?
Roman Harper, Roman, before you go, let's talk about – you were in Austin last week.
Correct.
I'm looking
for the drama. Is this the drama? This is all the drama we got? You haven't had me with any drama.
Oh, no, you've already created some drama in Kentucky, I can assure you.
And also I want to say I've had at least five Kentucky fans come up and thank me this week, Paul. And I just want to say, at least you're listening, and I actually did you a favor by telling you the truth, and you played better because of it. I'm sorry that it took all that for all this to come out, but I'm happy for Kentucky. I love this coaching staff of Kentucky is because they did not take it personal. All they did was, we're going to implement our own game plan and do what we need to do.
Hold on a second. They didn't take it personal. What universe are you living in?
I don't think they took it personal because if they did, they would have tried to come out and run the football and just be a tough team.
No,
instead, they did what it took to win the game.
I don't know. I don't mean to break this team. I don't think the University of Kentucky is like determining what they do based on what you say on the show. I mean, it would be great if they did. I know you're an important guy, but do you really think they're taking you that seriously?
No, I don't. I think fans take me way more seriously. I think that's what I'm saying. I'm giving the credit to the coaching staff and the players.
But they don't need extra motivation. You've had enough of the Kentucky fans, though, right?
I mean, I like Kentucky basketball. I'm a big fan of Kentucky basketball. I do. But I'm just glad I just know the coaches implemented a game plan that was going to help them win the game.
You know, they listened to me.
I said,
I'm not just saying this, but I think Kentucky really has great football fans. I think you – but anyway, we don't have time. We'll go to Lexington one day and let you figure it out with all the fans. I happen to like Kentucky football fans. I think they're great. I think you've just declared war on the Commonwealth.
I mean, if it's got to be that, it's got to be that. I just know some fans are still thanking me and saying that it was good. It actually helped them for some way or fashion. They believe that it helped them. I don't think it helped them at all. I think they just went out and played better than Florida that day. I don't have anything to do with the game.
I don't know where we're going next week. I don't know who Kentucky's playing. But can we get to Lexington as fast as possible? Because I
Yeah, but especially for a basketball
ESPN,
game.
We're going for basketball. Just told me ESPN doesn't have that in the budget to give you security in Lexington, Kentucky.
As long as we're going to a basketball game, I'm excited.
Okay, I know they have some huge basketball games up there, probably even against Auburn, since this is a basketball school too.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HOURENERGY.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HOURENERGY.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%. Is your schedule too packed to see a doctor about your erectile dysfunction? Well, with Hims, now you can get treated for ED without stepping foot outside your door. They're changing men's healthcare by providing access to affordable sexual health treatments from the comfort of your couch. Hims provides access to doctor-trusted ED treatment options such as chewable hard mints, brand name treatments like Viagra, or generic alternatives for up to 95% cheaper. The process is simple and entirely online. Just answer a series of questions and a medical provider will determine the right treatment option. If prescribed, your medication ships to you free. No insurance needed. So what are you waiting for? Join the hundreds of thousands of trusted Hims subscribers and get treated. Start your free online visit today at Hims.com/Paul. That's Hims.com/Paul for your personalized ED treatment options. Hims.com/Paul. Hard mints are chewable compounded products which are not approved by or verified for safety or effectiveness by the FDA. Prescriptions require an online consultation with a healthcare provider who will determine if appropriate. Restrictions apply. See website for details and important safety information. Subscription required. Price varies on product and subscription plan.
Live in Auburn on a gorgeous afternoon, and this is one of my favorite parts when we have a couple of students come up, both of whom work at the Auburn Plainsman, Noah Griffith and Christian Carr, both here, and we say hello to Noah. Noah is a regular, Christian. You've been here before, but hello to both of you. How are you?
We're good. How are you?
Good.
Thank you
it's
so much
good
for
to be
having
back.
Us.
I am doing great. We just had a lot of fun here. We were Professor Delaney's class dropped by. Both of you were in the group, and I don't know. I always feel like when I'm speaking, Noah and Christian, to young journalists, that I'm the one who ends up learning something. Because I don't know what you guys got out of it, but I had a blast. Thank you for having me.
Oh, it was wonderful.
Thank you for coming. We appreciate it.
Well, Noah, let's talk about this weekend and the campus here, because we all know this is a big game. We joked about it earlier with the class, but describe what this game means to students with so much hanging in the balance.
This game is huge for, I think, especially the fans' engagement this year. Depending on how this week goes, I think that could set up a great year or a year where the fans lose interest, I think. The big buzz around here has been the jerseys, the orange uniforms.
Yeah, so tell everybody what this is about here.
So last year, Penn State hosted Auburn. They had a whiteout. From the fans, one of the best environments in college football, I would say. And so I think there was a lot of push from the fans and a lot of hints that maybe Auburn was going to come out with orange jerseys. Auburn football Instagram posted the orange cleats that they're going to wear. They are going to wear orange cleats. The fans are going to be oranged out.
You think they'll go all orange?
They're going all orange, but the orange jerseys are something a lot of the fans are wanting to see. Team captains like Derek Hall were, you know, he changed his social media profile picture to an orange jersey, him wearing an orange jersey. So there was a lot of hype around that. I would say that's the biggest thing going around this week.
And Christian, it's been, I mean, you're obviously weren't around the last time I think we saw this. So when was the last time? Do you guys know?
I was on a SEC media day, was that in July, I think.
Yeah, I think.
No,
I was,
no, I'm talking about the orange jerseys.
Oh.
I'm not sure that they haven't done it in a really long time, which is why it was such a big deal.
It seems like I vaguely remember at the beginning, when I was barely your age. I mean, it's been a long time. In terms of energizing the student body, Kirsten, would that be enough outside of, I mean, is this really all about winning?
I think they do need a win. You know, and it's funny because energy goes both ways, right? So you have, like, if the students and the fans can get energized, that gives the team energy, right? But if the team wins, that gives the, or even makes a good play during the game, that gets the fans energy. So it's kind of this, you know, dual exchange where if you can get both of those going just a little bit, it'll feed into the rest of it. I've never seen, I think this has been one of the most hyped up games student-wise in a long time. So people have been so excited ever since last year's Penn State game for the Penn State team to come down. So, yeah, it should be interesting.
And in today's world, guys, this is so unusual because we have, and we're coming out of this era in college football where you have the games in Atlanta, Dallas, Orlando, all over the place. But, you know, there was a time when Auburn would go to Lincoln, Nebraska, or to California, Penn State. Alabama used to play Penn State every year. It's unique, especially for the fans. And I know a lot of you guys went up there last year, and there are Penn State fans who have never been to a game in the South. I think they played in Alabama about 10 or 11 years ago, but this is a rarity nowadays.
Yeah, it really is.
I would say I've seen a lot of Penn State fans on campus today. They're ready. Auburn traveled very well to Penn State last year, and it looks like they're returning the favor.
Noah Griffith and Kristen Carr from the Auburn Plainsmen. We had all your colleagues up here, and I'm curious. I'm not asking you to speak for all of them, but you are friends with your fellow students. How does this campus feel today about Brian Harsin?
I would say it's kind of mixed feelings. I would say, like, people really want wins, so once he gets
that's
that.
The most important.
But, I mean, with everything that happened in the spring, there was, you know, so many stories that were swirling around and rumors. It's been really hard for him to get, like, a firm foot on the ground, if that makes sense. But student-wise, I think people are excited. People, you know, really seem to like him, and he has a really nice presence on campus, and especially his first year, he was very present, trying to do stuff with students. So I feel like the feeling there is pretty good.
And Christian, I've always wondered about journalism would not be the word I would use to describe how that story was disseminated. Sleazy journalism might be, and we all have our theories, and I think we'll get to the bottom of here in some form or fashion, but just among your friends, when all that popped up and allegations that not, and you tell me, I've yet to see one scintilla of evidence to support any of what was put on social media about Brian Harsin.
Yeah, unfortunately, I think Auburn has a magnet for drama, as we were talking about earlier, but you know, it is unfortunate because even just what we learn in class, the importance of ethical journalism, the importance of finding proof, the importance of not having just a plethora of anonymous sources. Those are things that's just journalism 101. And hopefully, you know, when we graduate and get into the field, we can do a better job. But I mean, there's also this desire to want to be the first, right? You want to break the story. So it just can't be at the cost of the truth or the cost of what's actually happening.
Yeah, I think we all understand that football is big around here and people do care about wins and losses, but when that bleeds into putting a bad name on someone for no reason, that's where it crosses the line.
Yeah, and I have a theory, you know, I'll save it for some other vehicle about what really went down there, and I think I'm getting close to it. You guys may already know, but I think when the truth comes out, it's going to turn an ugly situation even worse, because you may not have forensic fingerprints on this, but this was one of the dirtiest tricks I've seen in a long time.
Yeah,
and I just And that is really irritating because I don't claim to know Brian Harsin any better than you. You guys probably know him better than I do. But he seems like a perfectly decent person whose family had to be subjected to something because a couple of folks didn't get their way.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's unfortunate. I think, you know, like we said, it's just if you can be truthful. And I don't understand why it's almost like there was this desire for him not to succeed from the very beginning.
I agree.
And I just wonder why. Like, what's the motivation there? Can you not just, well, you know, step back and let him do his thing?
Yeah, Christian, you're still young. And I wouldn't characterize either one of you as idealistic. But when you're in college, you're still thinking the best in people. And that's how you should. That's how all of us were. Unfortunately, as people, I feel like I'm giving you a lesson of life here, but it relates to the subject. As you get older, and I will speak broadly about some of these people, but let me assure you, I'm not speaking that broadly. You're used to getting your way, and when you don't get your way, you strike back. And the only thing that matters is not the greater good; it's power. And the main person who was not involved, the main person who was involved in the decision, the two people that were involved in the decision, I'll go Socratic method here with both of you. So who are the two people who are no longer here? It's pretty obvious. It's Stephen Leish, the president, and Alan Green. They were the sign-offs. Excuse me, Leish wasn't. Let me correct myself. Leish was the sign-off on Alan Green, but Alan Green and the former president, President Gouge, who probably just nodded his head, are gone. And I wonder why. I wonder why Alan Green was shown the door so quickly.
I couldn't give you a straight up answer to that either.
I'll answer my own question because you have to clear the decks when you want to do something, and that's to get rid of Brian Harsin. That's not hard to figure out.
Yeah, that may be the case. And I will say, like, I know that Gouge had a very great relationship with campus and students and very well loved, very well respected. So, you know.
But this was his second tour.
I mean, right.
I mean, President Gouge had retired. He didn't want the job.
Yeah.
He came in just to fill in. And you know, I remember about a year ago, I ran into Steve Leish, the former president, on a plane. We were sitting next to each other, and he was sitting across from me. And he told me at the time he was trying to find Alan Green a job because he knew he would not last if the season didn't go well. And it didn't go well.
And that's the other thing with Alan Green. I'm wondering if he was just fed up, like no one supported him, and he put in the work to be the guy at Auburn, and he just didn't have.
Well,
the backs.
It seemed that, you know, he asked for a clarification on his contract, and they said, "Yeah, your contract runs out at the end of the year, and it's not going to be renewed." So, if I said that to you, you would say, "Oh, okay. Well, I think I'll leave." I mean, what's the sense of hanging around when you're not wanted?
He just, with the firing of Gus Malzahn, like such an unexpected thing after a win. I just think he wasn't set up well. They didn't have the guy to replace Malzahn in mind. They just kind of saw it in the dark, it felt like.
Well, guys, thank you, Christian. Noah, it's always great to see both of you. And thanks for spending the afternoon here. And it's been a very eye-opening experience for me to talk to your class and to have you both of you here on the program. You both be well. Enjoy the weekend.
Thank you so
much.
Yes,
thank you.
We've had a blast. We're just getting started. We'll go around the SEC and around the country over the next 3.5 hours, including a conversation with Brian Harsin here coming up in a few minutes.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
This podcast is proud to be supported by Jet's Pizza, the number one pick in Detroit-style pizza. Why? It's simple. Jet's is better. With the thickest, crispiest, cheesiest Detroit-style pizza in the country, there's no competition. Right now, get $5 off any 8-corner pizza with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Go to jetspizza.com to learn more and find a location near you. Again, try Jet's signature 8-corner pizza and get $5 off with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Jet's Pizza. Better because it has to be.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPNpods. That's amazon.com/ESPNpods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
And we welcome you back. We are live in Auburn, and what an afternoon it is. And in about an hour and change, we'll talk to Brian Harsin, the head football coach here, as the Tigers get ready to take on Penn State. Let's head to Columbia, where Molly McGrath joins us on the part of the team tomorrow for the huge game with the number one team in the country, the Georgia Bulldogs, taking on Shane Beamer's Gamecocks. Molly, always great to have you on when we can find you. Good afternoon, and lay it out for us. What's happening in Columbia?
Good afternoon, Paul. Always so good to hear your voice. Columbia's buzzing, right? They have the number one team in the country coming to Williams-Brice Stadium. It is a noon kickoff, which, you know, Coach Shane Beamer said he wishes it was a night game because he wants their fans lathered up and loud and ready for this one. So he implored fans earlier this week, wake up at 5, 6, 7 a.m. if you have to. Get out there and tailgate as early as you can. Get into the stadium right when it opens and make this a hostile environment for the Georgia Bulldogs. And, you know, this is a Georgia team that hasn't been challenged yet. They haven't been fazed by anyone that they've taken on. But I think Kirby Smart is a little hesitant going into this game because this is an SEC East opponent and because they have a really talented team but some younger players who have never seen an environment like this. So I think they're, you know, going to be on top of it, and Kirby's going to make sure his team is ready. And also Stetson Bennett, their quarterback, has never played at Williams-Brice Stadium. He told me he's been there as a fan before. He knows it's one of the loudest places in the SEC. But he said that that will be a challenge in terms of communication. But, you know, Stetson Bennett, cool, the cucumber. He said, yeah, that's just noise. That kind of stuff doesn't bother me. So we'll see come kickoff tomorrow at noon.
You know, Molly, I want to ask you about Stetson because we were talking to some people earlier and they said, you know, who do you think should be leading the Heisman? And I was, I mean, I guess you're conditioned to these things. I was thinking C.J. Stroud, Bryce Young, and then they said, what about Stetson Bennett? And the answer is, not that it matters, but, yeah, what about Stetson Bennett? I mean, who's really done more right now in two games? Two games is all we have to look at, though. Tell us about the Stetson Bennett story.
Well, Paul, I said this week one. I'm speaking to Claude Felton, Georgia's SID, right before postgame after they just absolutely manhandled Oregon. And I look at him and I said, Stetson had a heck of a game. Here come the Heisman rumors. Here come everything swirling about the Heisman with Stetson, because he had six incompletions in that game against a Dan Lanning-led defense. He looked absolutely phenomenal, and nothing has challenged him since. I think that this game will be a good test for him on the road in the SEC. If he is able to be as accurate and as good as he's been, then absolutely he should be considered for the Heisman. And I thought that after week one. I thought, wow, yeah, Stetson Bennett, someone that people should be talking about because he works really hard. He has great football IQ. He's accurate. He's able to make plays. He makes his team around them better. And this is the number one team in the country. So I think that he should absolutely be talked about for the Heisman. I think the talk of him as the former walk-on, I think I said this to you maybe last week, the talk of Stetson Bennett as the former walk-on and the third string, and, you know, he's the forever backup and finally gets his team to glory in the national championship, I think we can cut that talk out now. I think Stetson Bennett has proved himself. He's a national champion. He was the offensive MVP of the national title game, and I think he deserves a little more respect, which he doesn't care because he's just going to show you on Saturdays. So if he continues to play at the clip that he's playing at right now, I definitely think that he should be considered for the Heisman. And, Paul, I'm a Heisman Trophy voter, so I am definitely going to be paying attention to him and all the other guys that you mentioned as well.
Well, speaking of Heisman, it was a year and 3 weeks ago, Molly, as we all remember, that the favorite was Spencer Rattler. few hundred miles away, maybe 1,000 miles in a different conference away. He's now starting against that Stetson Bennett. What have you learned about him and how he has played so far and what to expect from him on a big stage tomorrow?
Yeah, what a fall from grace in the last 13 months or so Spencer Rattler has had, the way that things ended at Oklahoma. But I think that that entire situation has humbled him. I think he's a different person now than he was when he first arrived at Norman. And teammates and coaches say that he came to Columbia, put his head down, worked really hard, was really humble and quiet, and wanted to prove himself with his work ethic. And he won over his teammates and was voted a team captain. So I think that we're seeing the best sense of himself, of who Spencer Rattler is off the field. On the field, I think that he is wildly talented and his potential is sky high. He just has to get out of his own way sometimes. There are times where he tries to do too much, tries to be the hero, and he can't do that, especially against a team like Georgia. So he has to rely on, you know, the talent that he has around him. They got some great wideouts in the transfer portal. They have some really great tight ends that they're going to want to get going the passing game a little more tomorrow. So I think that their team has potential to really shine, and Spencer Rattler is the guy who can get them there. It's just a matter of him staying out of his own way and trusting the guys around him.
Molly McGrath in Columbia, always great to have Molly on. We deeply appreciate it. We will keep talking about the SEC and what is going on tomorrow. Tom Hart, who's on the call for the Gators tomorrow night, he will join us next. Stick around.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the upcoming draft, the playoff intensity, and finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sports book bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
And welcome back. And Tom Hart about to join us. And we don't normally do birthdays for elderly people, but we're going to make an exception today as we say hello and happy birthday to Tom Hart, who's on the call tomorrow night in Gainesville. Tom, looks like you're already out celebrating. What's going on?
Well, I've got my personal driver, Cole Kublik. And, well, we are either headed to meet with the USF coaches in Ocala, or Paul's going to take me to Epcot for my birthday. We haven't decided yet, but we're going to be going south on 75 any second now, and who knows where we end up.
So, I don't know. There's the old joke about in my wildest dreams, and do you still have wild dreams? But in my wildest dreams, hanging out with Cole Kublik, is that high on your list of birthday afternoons?
I mean, listen, if you want to break down what happens in the A-gap and how to protect it, there's nobody better to be with. I mean, and he's driving me? This is ideal, Paul. These are my wildest dreams, and they're coming true. We're going to Piccadilly.
So can you guys help me because – sound like me now. Can you guys – because I sometimes think about – being late for our show, and I haven't quite figured out how to do the camera in the car. What's the key to that? Because we had a lady on yesterday who did it. You guys are doing it. Can you help me, Tom? You're a TV guy. I'm just a lowly radio man.
Yeah, here's the secret, Paul. My custom clothier tells me that I have 36-inch arms. So as long as I just hold it out in front of me, I can really work it. And by custom clothier, I mean the guys at Joseph A. Banks.
Yeah, I know that guy. He tells me you're in all the time. Okay, let's get to the game tomorrow night. Yeah, I know your guys are doing it. It's the prime time game. On first glance, it doesn't look great. Tell me why this game should be interesting, other than the fact that Florida is bouncing back from a pretty punishing defeat.
Paul, you always have a way to, if my ego ever gets out of control, to bring you back down to earth by reminding me that we always call blowouts. And how do we manage to call a game It's been 120-0 cumulatively over the first three games of the season. I think you're right. We could be seeing the same thing. But here's what I think about with USF. If you go back to 2007, this was a top five program. I know that was a long time ago, and Tim Tebow was still wearing a mouthpiece, and Urban Meyer was in Gainesville. But the fact of the matter is, this was a program then that looked like it was on the rise. Instead, they didn't invest in facilities. They didn't invest in an on-campus stadium. Their rivals in Orlando did. UCF is on their way to the Big 12, and USF hasn't beaten but one FBS team over the last 3 years. So, yeah, it's gonna be tough for them. I guess the silver lining is they've got a lot of transfers now. They've got a bunch of FBS transfers. They'll have a couple dozen guys in the two deep against Florida. And there's still a lot of Florida kids on that roster. So we know that they want to play well against their in-state school. I just think, all that being said, this is a get-right game for Florida. It's a get-right game for Anthony Richardson. They're very disappointed what happened last week against Kentucky. And even though Roman doesn't think that Kentucky's very tough, they sure did look tough, and Florida's got to answer some of those same questions.
Tom, let me zip around the SEC for a second, because there's so much conversation this week about multiple schools. Kentucky's big win, obviously. Where we are here, A&M, Alabama. Let me go to A&M for a second, because no one knows really when you start hitting the fire alarm, but it seems like this might be a pretty good time. What are you hearing, and what is your assessment of A&M right now after just a punishing loss last week?
Paul, if you break the glass on that fire alarm, that's like Michelangelo stained glass. It is very, very expensive, and you can't put it back together if you do break the glass. I think it's showing, and Cole and I were talking about this earlier today, that when you go into a rebuild situation, it doesn't happen in a vacuum. The rest of your division is still competing for national championships, and the rest of the teams that you're competing with, even outside your conference, they're not rebuilding. Ohio State's not rebuilding. And so that's what makes this thing tough from Jimbo's perspective. But the outside noise is, are they going to be better quarterback with Max Johnson? Is he going to evolve who he is as a coach, and specifically a quarterback coach? And you compare that to where Nick Saban was 6 years ago when Lane Kiffin came to town. Saban evolved. He changed. He modernized his offense. They modernized how they coach their quarterbacks. They modernized their strength and conditioning, and they never missed a beat. And Jimbo, since he had Jameis, hasn't made those same kinds of strides.
One more game or two I would like to ask you about, because you saw Alabama, what was it, 2 weeks ago? Last week. It was 2 weeks ago. What have you, and I talked to Cole earlier this week on his show, but what do you draw from that? Because everyone has a different opinion on what we saw from Alabama.
When we left their meetings and talked with the Utah State coaches 2 weeks ago, I was convinced they're one of the best teams, the best team in college football, and that they had very few warts. Now, did they have questions they needed to be answered? Yeah, they had a few of those. You know, who's going to step up at the wide receiver position? Are their cornerbacks good enough one-on-one to win battles against elite receivers? I didn't expect them to commit 14, 15 penalties and look that sloppy. I would never expect that out of a Nick Saban team from what we saw from them in Texas. But they're going to get better. You know, they're elite at quarterback. They're elite on the defensive line. And those question marks, specifically at wide receiver, they're going to improve throughout the course of the season. Saban, when we were there, compared it to when they played Amari Cooper as a freshman. They said, you know, he wasn't really ready to go when we were playing him, but we knew he was going to be an elite player, and the more reps he got, the better we were going to be as a team. I'm not saying they have an Amari Cooper in the wide receiving core right now, but they have a lot of guys who are going to get better.
Appreciate it very much. The birthday boy, Tom Hart, down in Florida. We are live in Auburn. We're 1 hour in, and it's been a very eventful hour. The next hour, we'll talk about A&M. We'll head to College Station. Jordan Rogers will join us. Todd McShay. Brian Harsin, an hour away.
Thank you for listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast. The Paul Feinbaum Show airs weekdays on the SEC Network, beginning at 3 Eastern.